Okay, so the first question I have for you is how important are deep, meaningful friendships? So, for example, like David and Jonathan, what if you were unable to develop that kind of intimate friendship in the local church, or if the people that you've invested in deeply leave or move away? So, speak to the importance of that and the practical side of it, what you should do.
I think we need to be realistic about that. Those really are exceptionally rare kinds of things that don't happen all the time. And when they happen, I think you just enjoy them and cherish them for the time you have them, because they really are unusual in certain ways, because most of our friendships don't develop to an incredibly intimate level, just because there have to be a lot of circumstances to come together, and it takes a lot of time. And in our society, because everybody's moving, so mobile, it's sometimes very difficult to have the time to develop that kind of relationship. I would just say, be realistic about it. If God gives you that kind of thing, give thanks, rejoice in it, and realize that it may come to an end. And it may come to an end a lot sooner than you want it to, but that's just reality. And you press on. Don't worry about... The bad thing about doing what I just did is it gives you a focus on it and gives you somehow an unrealistic expectations. And what I want... I don't want you so much focusing on how can I build a really close, intimate relationship, as so much as relaxing and realizing, Lord, help me to express my love and concern for the people in the church and my neighbors and my relatives and my friends that are outside the church and all that. Just help me to be more sensitive and faithful in that. And let it happen, Let it work. Because there are lots of factors that come together. Personality, interest, all kinds of things. So I have lots of friends that I have very little in common with. Except we're Christians, they love the Lord, they want to serve the kingdom, and we have a few other things. But I don't have a whole lot aside from those things, which are the most important. I don't have a whole lot in common as far as just common interest. They're not interested in the same kind of music though, or the books or whatever. They have different interests. That's fine. I don't have to force them to be like me or me to be like them. Just let it happen, because the Lord will lead you to these kinds of relationships. And I think the main thing is having that attitude and spirit that I really want to give myself to try to help other people and to make them richer. I want to make other people around me richer and not worry about my own profit or benefit in anything. Just let me help others. Let me see if I can live for those around me. And having that spirit transforms a lot of things and opens you up to a lot of relationships that you wouldn't have otherwise. And you get a lot of good surprises, I think, as time goes on, where you have relationships with people that you would never have thought you'd ever have a friendship with them. And it turns out in various mysterious ways it works together, where God brings you together. And you're very helpful and you're encouraged. They're encouraged. You're both stirred up to love and good works by the relationship. So don't worry. Don't worry about it. Just be faithful, and God will work it out, and He'll bring those things to pass. This is really gifts. These are gifts from Him. So I don't know. Y'all talk.
Steve, did some of the things you were talking about today, could you say that these have a wider application, maybe even among church bodies, denominations? How would you flesh that out?
Yeah, that's a good point. I hadn't thought about it, but it clearly does have things. I want to. One of the things we've started. I know a lot of probably everybody's doing it now, but it's a good thing where we pray for the other churches, and I get to talk to the other pastors and say, We really want praying for y'all, and what is there something specific we can pray for you, those kinds of things. And showing our recognition of their faithfulness and their being a part of their legitimate part of the body of Christ, and wanting to reinforce the fact that we recognize them as important members of the body in our area, and that we feel like we're serving with them and want to help them in every way and be helped by them. But I think it does open us up and gets us free from this pharisaical idea that we are the people and we just have to tolerate others because they're not worthy of us. But, you know, what can you do? You can't shoot them. So, you know, we'll put up with them and bear with them in their ignorance and all that kind of attitude I don't want to have. I want to be appreciative and pray for God's blessing on them and pray that sincerely because the more influence that our brothers and sisters have, the better it is. The better it is for all of us. And so we sincerely pray for them and do what we can to show our love for them and support and join them in service works and things in the city that that we can cooperate with them on. Man, I'm happy. We're happy to do that. So the spirit of this, I think, is broader. And I don't know if you were thinking about that, Eric, but maybe something else. Yeah.
Okay. Another one is you referenced earlier in one, I think probably the second talk, being transformed on the inside by the outside by things you know external, and it seems that the culture and our church or not our church but really the church in general teaches that heart transformation only comes from introspection or looking inside yourself, things like that. So the question is, can you elaborate on, you know, why that is? Where did this come from? How do we think that? And secondly, the ways of thinking that have directed the church in this way and how to fight against that.
Yeah, I don't know that I know enough to speak really, really intelligently on that issue. But this is a long-standing trend that the church... the psychology that's been prevalent in the church many times is focused on me looking inward rather than upward and outward, and that the way of holiness is found from the inside out. And I'm not, at least I can't recall right now, all the philosophical reasons why the church started thinking like that, but it's clear that that's been a very prominent thing in our country's history. The Great Awakening started this whole idea about having this moment of transformation, conversion experience that starts with a new heart and goes out. Now, you see, my point is not that God doesn't transform us. God transforms us. It's not even to say He doesn't transform our hearts. If you mean by that who you are, your nature, of course He does. The question is, how does that happen? Does it happen immediately or mediately? Does it happen through others? Does God use others in this transformation? Or does He just do it from heaven to earth, boom, you're done, and that's it? And it seems to me in the Bible that it's clearly the Spirit works through the members of the body in order to transform me. Now, clearly He gives us faith, so it's not like there's nothing that's given to us directly. Clearly, God works on us and works in us, but the work of salvation is a work that's applied to us and worked out in us through our communion with one another. And that's where, just as the Spirit comes from outside and transforms us, so He works with those things that are external, people, and the things that people do and say and use. He uses them to transform me as well. And that's how my salvation is worked out. And so, you don't want to talk. I'm not trying to say that there is no such thing as a personal relationship with Jesus. Of course, there is. But I want to orient us a little bit differently. I have this personal relationship with Jesus because I'm a member of His body. See the difference there? Let's say I rebel and apostatize and denounce Jesus. Do I still have that? Do I take that personal relationship with me when I depart from the body? The answer is no, because just as my big toe doesn't take its personal relationship with me when it's laying out on I-55 or I-20 or somewhere, you know, if it's out there, I don't have a personal relationship with it. You have a personal relationship with Jesus through the body of Christ, not apart from that body. And that's the emphasis that I think has been lost And it's been lost because of a lot of trends, but that's been a common theme in church history, where we bounce back and forth from individualism, and then sometimes you go where you almost deny the individual to the corporate, and it's, you know, you go from one extreme to the other. I think we need to be balanced on this, and I hope that we are coming to a more balanced view now, so that we can say, yeah, the Spirit does work in us. He does save us. God saves us by His grace, and He does this sovereignly, but He works that sovereign grace through the body. And that's where I come, and that's the argument of Paul, I think, in 1 Corinthians. That's why you have to care for one another, because other people are playing an essential part in your salvation. They're not Jesus. They're not doing the work of Jesus. You see what I'm saying? The Spirit is using the work, applying the work of Jesus to you through them. And that's the thing. And if I'm not clear, let me know, because I want to be clear on that. But that's the emphasis that I think we need to grasp. And that lays a foundation for why you esteem one another highly. Paul says, don't look only on your own things, but look on the things of others. Don't do anything from selfishness or vain deceit, but in lowliness of the mind, seek the good of others around you. And why? Well, because God is using them. You need them to be conformed to Jesus. That's how this works.
This question regards friendship and gossip. So in terms of personal friendships, how much can you share, especially with a close friend, about tough situations in your life, especially relationally that involves other people? Hold on just a second. Seems like if you have a close friend to discern wisdom, you have to share some details you wouldn't share with just anyone. When is the line crossed?
Yeah, that is difficult, and you always have to be concerned about your motives here. Sometimes I'm tempted just to want to tell you what other people have done to me, because that makes you feel sorry for me and gives me encouragement to be bitter against them for what they've done and how badly they've treated me. And I'm only looking for somebody who will join me in my animosity and outrage against them. That's not helpful. That's selfishness and vain deceit. See, that's the vanity that Paul is denouncing. But there may be a time where I'm genuinely stumped about how to approach an issue or a problem with another person, and I go to my friend and say, look, here's what's happened, and I'm not sure quite how to approach this. How can I help? How can I make this better? Help me think through this. And I then have to tell him what has happened. But you see, the whole point of me telling him what has happened so that he can understand and help me figure out a way to make this better. I'm not asking for sympathy here. I'm not saying, I want you to join me in my outrage. He's been a jerk. I want you to say he's a jerk. Say that to me. Yeah, he's a jerk. Thank you. That's all I wanted, because now I feel better that I don't like that guy even worse. You know, I'm just, okay, well, that's sin. That's just me wanting to be shored up in my evil, arrogant attitude. But if I'm going to you and I'm saying, I really need help because I just don't know how to approach this deal, what's happened here. Help me figure out a way to approach this. And I tell you what's happened, but I tell you for the reason, and I'm assuming, again, you're not going to spread that around. The whole purpose is not to defame the guy. I'm trying to figure out a way to solve the puzzle. And so I'm asking you to help me solve the puzzle. And that's, you see, that is legitimate, whereas just telling you so that you'll feel bad for me and feel badly toward that other person, all I've done is make things worse. Now, instead of me just being offended, I got another person offended. Well, I feel better about that, but I haven't helped anything but made things worse. And your goal is not to make things worse when you're in a bad situation. You want to make it better. What can I do to make a step, to get us moving in the right direction, to get out of this mess? I may not be able to solve it, but I got to get us moving in the way, in the direction that makes things better. You can always make it worse. If you think it's bad now, it can be worse, I guarantee you. And it doesn't take much effort to make it worse. It's easy to do that. Your goal is to make things better. And so if you're talking about people, for that goal, that ain't gossip. Gossip is sharing things that make other people look bad for your benefit.
Time for about one more, two more.
Okay. All right, this one's going to be fun, I think. You mentioned briefly the holy kiss. Are you advocating the holy kiss be restored and practiced in the present day, or do you that's right. This will be dangerous. Or are you suggesting a modern equivalent? And if so, you know what?
Yeah.
What?
Yeah. Well. You know what I'm thinking is, why did I even bring that up? I didn't have to do that. I knew this was going to happen. But no, I don't. People always say, well, you know, that was the conventional greeting of the day, and it was. I mean, that's true. And our conventional greeting is the very chaste handshake. And I think so. I don't want to say, okay, no, I want all the guys kissing each other, and all the girls doing it. But I also don't want to say. The sterile handshake, you know, I don't want to insult the nationality, but that's done by white Protestants many times. That's also not enough. And so I think it is important. What you see, and you do this naturally, don't you? I mean, with your relatives and friends, you embrace them. And it's not a romantic embrace. It's a thing. I'm thankful for you. So glad to see you. And I want to show you that. I want to show you that by embracing you. And I think that's a good practice. I mean, that might be a compromise. If you don't want to go the whole way here, go ahead and be very chaste and do the embracing. But I think that's a good sign that you, and it's clearly not unimportant, or Paul wouldn't have repeated that exhortation over and over and over again. I mean, honestly, what is it, 8 times in the epistles where he expressly says that, I do want you to greet one another with a holy kiss. He doesn't say, I want you to greet one another and show your love for each other. He doesn't say that. He says, I want you to do it in this particular way. And I think he does it that way because of the significance of kissing in the Bible. Kissing is a symbolic eating of one another. You're taking one, you're acknowledging your unity with another. You're taking that one into you and saying, like when I eat food, the food becomes part of me. Well, I can't take a bite out of you, but a kiss is a symbolic eating of one another in that way, so that you're saying, we are one, we are one. Eating the bread at the table makes us one bread. If I eat a meal with you, we become one in the sense that this, if we're sharing the same entree, then, so we're eating the same roast, for example, we become one in a peculiar way because that roast becomes part of us. This roast becomes a means by which we are united because that roast became part of you and became part of me. This is why you don't like to eat with people you're mad with, right? You say, let's go to lunch, and the other guy goes, no, I just want to meet with you. I'm going, uh-oh, now I'm going to get it. He doesn't want to eat with me, so that means he's got a problem, you see. And it is. You don't want to eat with people you're mad with. I don't want to have you over to my house when I'm mad at you. I want to have you over to my house when we're friends. We want to eat together for that reason. There's a whole bunch of stuff that Paul is pulling up when he emphasizes the holy kiss. So that's where I'm a little bit hesitant. I say, don't throw it all out, because there's a whole bunch of biblical theology behind that that Paul is dragging up, whether the Corinthians realize it or not. But he's bringing that to the fore and saying, I want you to do it this way. Yes, I know that's a kind of a common way a lot of people do it, but I want you to be sure you do it this way. And I think that's part of the reason why he emphasizes that. So, I think it is important, especially if you're Norwegian or Dutch or one of the other northern climate peoples, that you go out, you force yourself to do that. And you really do have to force yourself, because it's not, you may have grown up, you know, I'm growing up in a Celtic, southern, dangerous culture where everybody's hugging each other whether they love them or not, you know. So it feels real scary to people that haven't grown up in it. But I'm in that culture and everybody's hugging everybody all the time for good reasons and bad, but that's a very natural thing for me. It may not be natural for you, and that's why you have to be exhorted to express your love in this way that may feel a little awkward at first, but it's good for you because these are the kinds of things that assure us in ways that cannot be explained by a lecture or a paper or anything else. They assure one another, that guy really does like me, and I'm happy about that.
Last question. Okay.
Good.
So let's say you have a deep friendship with someone.
Okay.
This question is, how do you handle things if that person has fallen away from the church and become stubbornly atheist, agnostic, or some other kind of apostasy?
Yeah. Well, the friendship changes because I can't endorse the guy. I can't, the modern word, affirm the guy. I can't affirm the guy in his rebellion against Jesus. So clearly the friendship changes. But I want to take advantage of the friendship to go to him and really give it to him as hard as I can give it to him. And he knows that I'm not just putting on a show, I'm not doing my duty. I'm doing this because I love this guy and I don't want him to go to hell. I don't want him to die, and he knows that. And that, so the power of the friendship is still useful, like Nathan did to David. I mean, that was, here's a guy who's a longtime friend of David's, but in fact, this is the king now. And the king can have you, you know, and Nathan was taking a big risk here, but he loved David. And so he goes and gets in his face. That's a much more tough confrontation than even it reads. And Nathan is really taking a huge risk in friendship here. But he knows love demands this. I cannot let my friend go this way because David is headed to hell. And Nathan knows it. And that's why he gives him the story. That's why he confronts him and tells him, this is what you've done and you better face it. And David does. Well, that's the kind of thing you have in this kind of scenario. You've got a friend who's turning away from Jesus. That's not a small thing. That's not like he's going to be a vegetarian or something weird. No, this is much bigger than that. And so I've got to go get in his face about this, and I can do it with all confidence that he knows I'm not playing a game, I'm not putting on a show, I'm not pretending to love him, I'm not trying to be holier than thou. I care about this guy. I've loved this guy a long time. And I'm sickened over the fact that he's turning away from life here. And I want him to know it. So I can just, you know, you can really pound a guy, and you need to. You really wear yourself out on the guy in love, making him face up to what he's doing. And if God doesn't bless it right there, maybe later on, maybe the duty, but you take that adversary, the friendly, become his friend who loves him, who now is his deadly enemy, and I don't apologize for it. I'm his enemy because I want him to live and not die. And so that's a good thing for him to realize. And it's a very powerful thing when you don't isolate yourself from him. Go to him and lay it on him, you know. So maybe there's other things there, but that's really a good thing.
Thank you. Thank you so much. Mm-hmm. And thank you for coming for the encouragement and challenge that you've given us today. We really appreciate it.
So. Yeah, thanks, Lord. Thank you.